Good morning. Good morning. I'm glad to be here. I hope you are as well. I feel blessed. I always enjoy getting to come together with our family here, and I tell you, there's not much more exciting than what happened last Sunday evening. Sunday morning was exciting when we had someone that decided they wanted to give their life to Christ, and I was blessed to be here for that and to be a part of that. And then Sunday evening when we got a phone call to come back up here, boy, that was good to be a part of that. I will say that I've been banned from going to any more Devil Dog games because they won handily without me being there. So no, I haven't officially been banned, but that was a good thing. I love being a part of our community, don't you? I love being a part of our church family, don't you? I think that the family that we have and the strength that we draw from one another and the support that we offer one another is invaluable. And I don't think that anything can even come close to comparing to that. And I want to begin our study of this text this morning with an understanding that that's the family Jesus grew up in. A group of people, not just his mom and dad, but a group of believers who believed strongly and fervently together and supported one another in life. We're going to see that as we look at this a little bit. As we have looked so far and as we look a little bit, Luke says in the beginning of his gospel, he says, I've tried to gather all the facts. I've talked to the witnesses. I've read the documents. I've researched everything I can research. Like a student would research a term paper, Luke has researched all the facts. He's talked to the eyewitnesses. He's got all his information together, and he's trying to set forth an orderly account of all the things that Jesus began to do and teach. Now, that's a strong paraphrase of Luke chapter 1 where he starts off, but that's what he says. I've gone out and looked up everything I can. I've turned over every stone I possibly can. I've got all the information I can, and now I'm going to share it with you. And so he begins to talk about Jesus. He tells us about Jesus' conception by the Holy Spirit in chapter 1, verse 35, about his birth in chapter 2 and verse 7, about his early childhood in verse 40 of chapter 2, about his life as a youth in the verses that we're looking at this morning, about his adult life and ministry in chapter 3 through chapter 23, and about his resurrection in chapter 24. He tries to keep everything in an orderly account. Unlike John, who apparently just, hey, I remember this, and I remember this too, and this was really important, and he did this as well, and some of the things that John did are not necessarily in chronological order as you read the Gospel of John. Makes it a little confusing sometimes when you're trying to compare the three gospel accounts that seem to follow an orderly timeline with John, which doesn't seem to follow the same timeline. But Luke has tried to lay it out so that we can understand it. This paragraph that we're looking at today is the only references we have anywhere to the boyhood of Jesus. Now, there are some so-called gospel accounts, the Gospel of Barnabas and the Gospel of Peter and the Gospel of somebody else and the Gospel of somebody else, that supposedly were written by apostles about the boyhood of Jesus. They were all supposedly written by the apostles about 300 years after all the apostles died. I don't know that we can accept them as fact because they don't seem to match up the timeline to be right. In those Gospels, Jesus did things like when his friends were mean to him growing up, other boys were mean, he'd turn them to stone. And when his little bird flew away from him one time, his pet bird, he turned it into stone, and it fell and its wing broke off, and so the rest of its life it had only one wing when he made it back into a bird, but it would never fly away again. I just say those things aren't consistent with the Jesus I read about in the New Testament. So I would go from there as I look about that. But as we look at this, we're going to notice some things. In the movie Home Alone, there's a scene of a family, and they're gathered together for Christmas. And everybody's celebrating Christmas, and they're exchanging gifts, or got their gifts there at least. They're going through all the rigmarole of Christmas with the big feast and the big family, and everybody's talking. And they fall asleep, and they wake up late the next morning. And they're hurrying to get to the airport because if they miss their plane, they're going to miss their trip. And so they're rushing to the airport, and one of the neighbor kids is there, and he gets mistaken as Kevin when they start doing the count. And so they take off, and little Kevin is still asleep. He's up in the attic because the night before during supper he had misbehaved, and they sent him upstairs to sleep in the attic without the rest of his dinner as a punishment for misbehaving at dinner. Kevin looks out the window and sees them drive off, but they're gone, and he's left home alone. And then we see as the movie goes on how he handles the two bad guys that come into the neighborhood. We see his mom in the airport finding out that her son was missing. I would imagine every mom and dad here has probably experienced something like that at one time or another. You look around and your child's not where they're supposed to be. Maybe you're in the store and they're under a, or they went down the next aisle out of your sight, or maybe like one of our kids used to do, they're hiding in one of the racks of clothes that are there and you have to go find them because they are playing hide and seek. They just didn't tell you. But there's what happened to her. She was quite distraught. When they're finally reunited, Kevin's parents are amazed at his wisdom in dealing with the problems that they had at home while they weren't there. So that's kind of what happened. I would imagine that Mary, Jesus' mother, must have felt very similar when they realized that her son was not part of the caravan anymore. I know he's 12 years old. I know that in those days, a 12-year-old was older for his years than a 12-year-old is today. Although I think sometimes some of our 12-year-olds know way more than they should. But still, I know that that's going on. Imagine the anxiety. Imagine the panic she felt until she's reunited with her son. How would you have felt? How would you have felt? You go to the big city. You go to the capital city. So let's say you go to Washington, D.C. And you get to Washington, D.C. and the family spends a week there. And while you're spending the week there, you see the sights and you go by and you visit all the important places there are to visit. And then you make it all the way back to Kentucky before you realize your kid's not with you. You say, well, that would never happen for us. Probably not, because we don't have that support that they had. Remember what I said earlier about they had a family like we have here? They had the whole group of them traveling. Their friends and their family from hometown, they're all traveling together and they've gone on this trip together. Can you imagine if our whole church went off to Washington, D.C., and Rod's got the youth over here, and the 55-plus group's going to this thing over here, and the young married couples are going to this activity over here, and then the ones that are just lazy don't go to anything, right? And then all of a sudden, the buses start loading up, and all the buses are loading up, and they count, and the head count looks about right, and they take off, and they head back. About the time you get to Kentucky, it's like, hey, where's George? Oh, he was going to ride the other bus. Oh, okay. On the other bus, they don't even notice that I'm not there because I wasn't supposed to be on their bus. And then about the time you get to Kentucky and start unpacking, Gail says, where's my husband? Everybody says, I don't know. Where is your husband? She says, I don't know, but I need him because he's carrying all my luggage. That's why she would miss me probably. and then everybody comes back and looks for me, right? At least Gail would hopefully come back and look for me. Somebody would look, say, where's he at? He would have been here if something hadn't happened to him. That's probably the way Mary's and Joseph felt about Jesus. Something must have happened or he'd be here. I can't believe he's not. So we want to look at this a little bit as we look at this text. It goes like this. His parents went to Jerusalem every year at the Feast of Passover. When he was 12 years old, he went up to Jerusalem according to the custom of the feast. Something to say about his parents and about their friends and neighbors. This was their regular habit to do. It was normal for them to come to worship service. It was normal for them to travel however far it took to go for the week of the feast. When they finished the days, as they returned, the boy Jesus lingered behind in Jerusalem. Joseph and his mother did not know it. But supposing him to be in the company, they went a day's journey. You know, his parents went every year to Jerusalem. There were three feasts required of all males of Jerusalem, or all males of Israel, that they had to attend each year. It was the Feast of Pentecost, which they called the Feast of Weeks. It was the Passover, which is where they're going to in this particular event. And then there's the Feast of Booths and Feast of Tabernacles, I think sometimes it's called. And they're required to go to those. Now, women didn't have to go. And in many families, the wives wouldn't go. It was just too much hassle. You got all the little children. You can keep them at home a whole lot easier than you can take them maybe a week or 2 weeks' journey to go to these feasts. And so oftentimes the women didn't go and the younger children didn't go. But in this family, no, in this extended family, in this group of believers that were traveling together, the women and children were with them. That's kind of a different thing. They were all pretty dedicated, or they wouldn't have been going in the first place. I think we need to see that. They were devoted to following God, and that's the group Jesus was raised in. Apparently, there's a large contingent that are traveling together as they do this, large enough that Jesus wasn't even missed. I mean, it was that big a group, and you know, maybe it's because the road was dangerous and fraught with peril. Maybe that's why the big group went together. Maybe it was dangerous to leave the women and children behind in that time frame when the Romans had occupied. But the truth of the matter is, one of the great reasons the gospel was able to spread like it could was because the peace that the Roman Empire provided and the protection of the soldiers of the Roman Empire. So maybe it wasn't that. Maybe it was just they wanted to go to worship. You know, when I was a boy, the whole world was my playground. I'd get on my bike and I'd ride all the way across town. For a while, when we lived in Little Rock, I had a paper route that took me a mile and a half from my house. And I would ride my bicycle up and down the hills in Little Rock a mile and a half from my house when I was 10 years old. Probably most 10-year-olds today wouldn't be allowed to do that. When we moved back to Newport, and I lived in Newport, I'd get on my bike, I'd ride over the city lake, I'd fish all day, run around, play football with my friends, go across the levee, and we'd go wild game hunting with our BB guns. And we would circle the world. Most of us in my generation did those things. And the only two rules that were steadfast were, one, you better come when mama calls, even if you're 10 miles away, you better hear. And two, when the streetlights come on, you have to come home. And so when the streetlights came, by the way, if you're deep, big game hunting way out in the woods, you don't see the streetlights come on. So you may get in trouble there. You come home when it's dark enough that you can't see very well, and you do finally come home. And the way that rule was enforced was discipline. And discipline in those cases usually didn't mean talking to you about why you didn't obey the rules. It usually meant explaining it to you while the Board of Education was being applied to the seat of learning. You know, that's the way it was. That's probably what's going on there. Jesus' parents, they're part of this thriving religious community. They're obviously faithful. They've all been there. Luke points out they attended the feast every single year. And so imagine the excitement on the way. Many of them probably had friends and relatives that they only saw once a year or twice a year or three times a year at the feasts. It's the only time we ever see Uncle So-and-so. They're looking forward to it. And on the way there, they're talking about, oh, I can't wait to get to the feast, and I'm going to see Brother So-and-so, and I'm going to see Uncle So-and-so, and I'm going to see my cousin Eileen that I hadn't seen in years and years and years. And I'm looking forward to this. And, you know, the Browns have a new baby. And I can't wait to see their new baby. That baby's almost a year old now, and I've never seen it. I can't wait to see that new baby. I heard about it. They're excited about that. And they look forward to the feast for that very reason. And hey, you never know, you might find a suitable spouse for your family in the church group. You know, your child, your son, or your daughter might need a wife or a husband, and you might find just the right one there in that group because you want them to marry in the faith, and there's an opportunity there. So we're looking forward to that. And so now they've been there, and they've experienced that, and it's time to head back home. Now, nobody looks forward to the journey, but most of us, when we've been gone for a while, look forward to getting back home. And on the way back home, they were probably talking about, hey, did you get a chance to talk to so-and-so? Oh, yeah, I did, and I got to hold that new baby. And did you get a chance to talk to so-and-so? Yeah, I did. And did you notice that his daughter is really, really attractive? And I noticed my son saw her two or three times, and I'm going to be talking to them about this because that might be a good match. Did you notice so-and-so, or did you talk to so-and-so? No, I didn't even see him. Were they there? Well, I feel left out because I didn't get to talk to them. They're refreshed. They're renewed. As they're walking, they're saying, man, did you hear what the rabbi said about Sabbath keeping, that we shouldn't even do this and so on the Sabbath because we have to make sure we follow the law? Yeah, I heard that, and I disagreed with him on this point. And the discussions that they're having along the way, the excitement that's the buzz on the way and on the way back, and in the middle of it, there's a kid missing. And they didn't notice, because they were busy with all the busyness of their lives. You know, that's the way I always feel about the Freed Hardeman lectureships. I can't wait for Freed Hardeman lectureships, the first Sunday in February every single year. It's on my calendar. The elders here have been very gracious ever since I've been here. They let me go to the Freed Hardeman lectureship. Gail and I on the way over there, now let me rephrase that. Gail and I can already tell you where we're gonna eat while we're there. We've got that planned out. We can already tell you before we get there which lectures we're planning to attend, because when the lecture flyer comes out, we start looking at it and say, I want to be at this one, I want to be at this one, I want to be at that one. All the way there, we're talking about the friends we expect to see while we're there and the lectures we're going to attend. And that's just two of us in the car. And then all the way home, we're talking about the lectures we went to and the friends we saw. And she says, well, I ran into so-and-so over in the coffee area during between these two lectures while you were in such and such lecture. I said, oh, man, I wish I'd have got to see him. And I said, well, I ran into so-and-so over there, and we spent 45 minutes together in the most boring lecture I've ever been to in my life. And she says, oh, I'm glad I wasn't there with you. You know, but we share those things, and we're excited about those things. Now, so far, we've never left a kid behind. But we've left Bibles. We've left caps. I remember driving several times, several miles out of the way to go back and get a cap that I left there because it was one of my favorite caps. We've left all kinds of notebooks and articles of clothes. We've left all kinds of things behind. So far, it hadn't been a kid. But we have left things behind because we got so excited. Probably Mary and them were so excited. Mary's busy taking care of the kids. Joseph's talking with the men about the things we're doing. Mom's taking care of the kids, so Jesus should be with her. Dad's taking care of things with the men, and Jesus is now a man, so Jesus is probably with Dad. They didn't worry about him too much till he didn't show up at dinner. Because, after all, he's considered a man now by Jewish standards. And probably, I don't know that this happened in that day and time, but probably when the young boy finally was accepted as a man, he'd rather hang out with the other young boys who are now men than with the young boys who are still boys. There's a rite of passage there, this growing up idea and becoming accepted by the older boys. And that's probably something that they encouraged. Now they're going to eat and study and play together because they're men now. His parents had raised him in an environment of trust and in loving God, so they weren't worried about him. Remember what happened when he was born? They made sure he was circumcised. They made sure the sacrifices were made according to the law of Moses. They made sure he was dedicated to God. They made sure everything that needed to be done. And all these years, they keep taking him to all of the religious festivals. They probably made that sojourn many times, and Jesus often probably hung out with his friends while they were traveling. That's just normal. They were passing on their faith, but it didn't work out the way they wanted. The boy Jesus remained behind in Jerusalem. Maybe it's because his duty to God had begun to dawn on him. We see that in his words when he says, "Do you not know I had to be about my Father's business?" Maybe that's what it was, because he's been trained in the ways of the law from birth, and now he's just been committed to God during the festival. He's just been what the modern day festival is called Bar Mitzvah. He had just been Bar Mitzvah. He had just become a man, and here he is at his first feast as a man. Here he is for the first time able to sit with the rabbis and to talk, and so he did. Note how much confidence his parents had in him. They traveled on for a whole day without even missing him. It wasn't because they didn't care. It's because they trusted Jesus. When my mom and dad let me get on my bike and ride wherever I wanted to go, it wasn't because they didn't care. It's because they trusted me. They knew I'd be home. When mom needed a can of corn or something like that to finish her supper, she'd give me some money. I'd get on my bicycle. I'd ride across town to Kroger, and I'd pick up whatever it was she wanted, and I'd ride back home. She didn't have to worry about whether I was going to be okay. Now, she might have worried about bad people trying to grab me or something like that, but I wasn't very desirable, so didn't have to worry much about that. But she could trust me, and that's probably the way Jesus' parents were. They could trust him, so they didn't miss him until he shows up for dinner, or doesn't show up for dinner. And so the next few verses talk about how they looked for him, and looked for him, and looked for him. I think it's interesting. It says they looked for him for 3 days. It says when they came to Jerusalem, they looked for him for 3 days. So they traveled a whole day. It took them a whole day to get back. Okay, let me rephrase that. Moms, dads, if you traveled a whole day with the group, groups don't travel very fast. You travel a whole day with a caravan that's making maybe 10 or 12 miles a day, and you get there and you realize your kid's gone, how long is it going to take you to get back that same distance? Not near as long. You're going to be hurrying when you get back. So they hurried back to Jerusalem. They get there for 3 days. They look for him. They're trying to find him. And he's not in the troop. I would imagine they went through everybody. And then they get back to Jerusalem, they start looking for him, and he's not easy to find when they get back to Jerusalem. Can you imagine this conversation? Excuse me. Have you seen a little Jewish boy about 12 years old in Jerusalem during a feast when all the people had from the country had come into town. You think there were any 12-year-old Jewish boys running around in Jerusalem at that time? That's not a very good description. Well, he's got dark hair. He's got a big nose. Whatever it is that are the descriptors of the Jewish boy in that time, they all are going to look pretty much the same. All them boys are going to look pretty much the same. Well, he's 12 years old. Well, there's going to be a lot of them there. And they look and they look, and they probably went back to the inn they stayed at, if they stayed at an inn, or the camping area if they camped while they were there. They went back and looked all around there. Probably, it's a couple of days later, you're going to go check and see where would he have found food. You're going to look in those places, see if maybe he's someplace where he could find food, or maybe over by a well where he could get a drink of water. Where is he going to sleep at? So you're going to check all those places. Where's the last place they think to look? The temple. Why would a kid be at the temple of all places? I think sometimes we don't realize how much our children enjoy worship service. Sometimes we think we have to drag them, and sometimes they're looking forward to it just as much as we are. Sometimes even more than we are. But that's where he was. He was there. He's found, and he's recovered while he's there. You know, it says after 3 days they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. All who heard him were astonished at his understanding and answers. They saw him. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Look, your father and I have sought for you anxiously." Now, my mom's words would have been a little different. She'd have been pretty upset if I'd have been missing for 3 days. She was quite reserved in this. And then he said, "Why did you seek me? Did you not know I had to be about my father's business?" They did not understand the statement he spoke to them. Now, when he's found after 3 days, that's kind of amazing, because later on, after his death, his disciples are going to find him after 3 days, aren't they? After 3 days in the grave, he's going to be found all over again. He starts with his father's business by disappearing for 3 days. He finishes his father's business by disappearing for 3 days. There's maybe some significance to that, I'm not sure. But he's found in God's temple among the teachers, and that's pretty significant. You know, these folks aren't known for wasting their time with young boys. And his mother complains about it. This is the only rebuke we ever see of Jesus by his mother. It's, "Hey, why did you do this to us?" And then his reply, it says, the first recorded words of Jesus ever. You see them right there. "Why did you seek me? Did you not know I must be about my father's business?" That's why Jesus came. That's why he was there. He was about his father's business. Those are his first words, and it shows what he thinks. There's something else interesting to note here. His parents left him. He didn't leave them. He stayed behind. He didn't leave them. They left him. You know, in the world we live in today, there are many people who were walking with Jesus who have left him. He's still there. He hasn't gone anywhere, but we can leave him. And we can come back to him, just as his parents did. But I think there's a lesson there, too, that he hasn't gone anywhere. You know, one of my favorite stories from way back when is a couple sitting there, and they're in their car, and they pull up to a railroad crossing. There's a pickup truck in front of them. And in the pickup truck, there's a boy sitting in the driver's seat, and there's a girl sitting next to him. And she's so close to him that you can't tell where one begins and the other one ends. I mean, they are right up against each other really close. And the wife looks at her husband, and she says, "You know, we used to be like that." He looks over at her sitting on her side of the car, and he says, "I haven't gone anywhere." You know, Jesus hadn't gone anywhere. I think sometimes we ought to see that and recognize that and realize the beauty of that as we look at this recovered boy here. You know, it says of him that after that, he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to him. And it's notable in some translations that he refers to her as woman. "Woman, did you not know I needed to be about my father's business?" And I've heard a lot of stuff made about that through the years. People saying, well, he's identifying her as less than himself because he's now a man and she's woman, so she's less than he is. And folks, moms and dads, and this lesson was written with moms and dads in mind more than anybody else as I was writing it. Because that's what I see here is a lesson for moms and dads in raising up our children to love God and then being willing to accept when they do. But moms and dads have a responsibility to teach proper respect for each other. You know, I think sometimes we forget that. I remember a class at Harding one time where a young man at Harding would not do the homework assignments that were assigned to him or the out-of-class assignments that were assigned to him because his professor was female. And women have no right to usurp authority over a man. And so he wouldn't do any of the homework assignments. By the way, the dean didn't see it the same way he did, and he got to keep his grade that he didn't earn, or that he, I guess the grade that he did earn, and he had to repeat the class. So maybe that's something we ought to see. But, you know, that's not the only time I've ever seen that. Years ago, I had a couple of boys that were brothers in my youth group, and they thought all the girls in the youth group ought to submit to them because they were men. And I said, if you were really men, you wouldn't have to worry about that. No, I actually did have that sort of that conversation with them. Women do not have to submit to every man in the world. That's not what this teaches. That's not what the Bible teaches. Young ladies, you don't have to submit to every guy that comes walking along telling you, you've got to submit to me because I'm a man and you're a woman. That's stupid. It's ridiculous. We need to teach our children to respect one another. Now, it's true that the Lord said that in his church, he wants men to take positions of leadership. It's very true. But you know what's also true? Just as true? He said that man can't serve as an elder unless he's got a faithful wife. He needs her. We need each other. That's part of God's plan. That's part of God's plan. That's not man's plan. Man's plan is, hey, I could do a whole lot better without. I could do a whole lot better than that. You know, I think sometimes boys quit listening to their moms because someone has twisted this scripture and said, hey, you know what? You're a man now. You don't have to listen to women. Women can't usurp authority over you. I think sometimes boys quit respecting older ladies in the church for the same reason and don't realize that Jesus went home and submitted to them. Jesus went home and submitted to them. If we want to be Christ-like, we need to learn to submit because he's growing up. He's growing up intellectually. He's studying God's word. He's learning God's word. He's learning a craft from his dad. He's growing up physically. You know, you grow a whole lot from the age of 12 on. Girls, a lot of times, by the time they're 14, you can tell how tall they're going to be for the rest of their life because they've pretty much reached it. You can tell eighth grade class pretty well because the girls are taller than the boys in the eighth grade a lot of times. By the ninth grade, the boys start shooting up, and they keep growing, and they keep growing. And moms and dads, I hate to tell you this, if you've got a boy that's growing somewhere around eighth or ninth grade, somewhere around ninth grade, he's going to grow overnight 3 or 4 inches, and those pants you bought yesterday won't fit anymore because they just grow. And their shoes are too tight within a day or two after you paid $100 for them. That's just the way boys grow. So he grew. He grew up in physically. He grew up spiritually. Because what was his parents' custom that we talked about at the very beginning? To hang out with a group of very spiritually minded people and to make sure they always went to the worship services. That was their custom. That's where he was raised. That's the society and the body and the family that he was raised in as he did that. And so we see that and we understand it. He grew up socially. You know, as you grow, if you choose to mature, some don't. But if you choose to mature while you're growing, folks are going to notice that. And you're going to find yourself in ever-increasing positions of responsibility. Now, it may not be very much responsibility, but you know what? The other night I needed something from my office, and Shelby Kern, I don't see Shelby this morning, I don't see her, but Shelby Kern was there, and I said, Shelby, will you go get thus and such for me? And she took off down the hall, and she got thus and such for me off my desk. I can tell you, I would not have sent my 3-year-old granddaughter to do the same task. She couldn't have done it. Shelby's grown a little bit. She's mature more than my 3-year-old granddaughter is. So he grew that way too, and we see that, and we understand that as we look at it. Moms and dads have the responsibility to help our children grow smarter, to grow stronger, to grow closer to God, and to grow socially with other people. Moms and dads have that responsibility. Young people need discipling. And the root word for that is discipline. That's where we get our word discipline from. And we don't like the word discipline very much, but children need discipline while they're growing up. The Proverbs are full of instruction like that. Train up a child in the way he shall go, and when he's old, he'll not depart therefrom. That doesn't mean that if you point your child in the right direction, he will never go in a different direction. That means if you let a child go in the direction he wants to go, then he's going to go in that direction. He's not ever going to come back.